And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. Today's commentary is called Stumpage System Betrays British Columbia Forest's True Worth. This story written by Neville Judd from Vancouver, Canada. Forest companies are abusing British Columbia's timber appraisal system to boost their profits at the expense of the taxpayer, said a report recently published. The report, Stumpage Sellout, claims that since 1998, forest companies operating on mainland Canada's west coast have avoided paying $224 million Canadian to the provincial government. That's about $150 million American. Vancouver-based International Forest Product accounted for nearly $100 million Canadian of that amount, said the Sierra Legal Defense Fund, a nonprofit environmental law organization which produced the report. Quote, the companies have logged a fortune out of the woods, and British Columbians who own the forest are paying the price, said Karen Riston, Sierra Legal Executive Director. The millions lost in revenue in those years could nearly have doubled BC Environment's annual budget, revenue that could have been channeled back into much-needed field work and enforcement. The Western Canada Wilderness Committee referred to yesterday's the recent report as Timbergate and joined Sierra Legal in calling for British Columbia's Attorney General Graham Brobrick to investigate the province's timber appraisal system. Quote, it appears that the Ministry of Forests, under the direction of past forest ministers, has set up a stumpage appraisal system that clearly violates the Ministry of Forests Act Section 4 requirements to collect stumpage revenues on a fair and equitable manner, said Paul George, Western Canada Wilderness Committee Executive Director. This opened up the door for companies to misrepresent the quality of the wood they have been logging to get lower stumpage rates and cheat the public purse out of millions and millions of tax dollars. America, with lush fir, spruce, and cedar growing to sizes unparalleled elsewhere, about two-thirds of British Columbia's forests, roughly 59 million acres, are public land, sometimes called crown land. Charged with overseeing the management of this public forest land is BC Forest Service, part of the province's Ministry of Forests. The Forest Service manages about one quarter of public forest land for revenue opportunities, including commercial timber harvesting. The other three quarters is managed for non-commercial timber values, such as recreation and cultural uses. Each year, about 1% of that land, between 160 and 190,000 hectares, of provincial forest land is harvested. To generate revenue from the trees cut by private companies on public land, the provincial government uses a stumpage system. Before a company can log wood from Crown land, it must obtain a cutting permit from the Forest Service. To do this, it must provide information about the area it proposes to log, including the species and the volume of timber found there, an estimate of the logging costs, and the going market rate for the wood. Terrain stability assessments, road layout design plans, fish and wildlife inventory information, and silvicultural prescriptions must also be submitted. The Forest Service uses this information to calculate the relative value of the stand based on the quantity and the quality of the wood, current market considerations, and the cost of logging. Then it sets a stumpage rate, the amount of money the licensee must pay per cubic meter to the Crown for the right to log the timber. The rate is set out in the cutting permit, which is usually awarded for between 2 and 5 years. The initial stumpage rate can be revisited and adjusted either quarterly or annually to account for changes in market conditions or environmental factors such as windstorms or forest fires. Using data obtained from British Columbia's Minister of Forests under the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, Sierra Legal contends that forestry companies are abusing the stumpage appraisal system by employing a technique called grade setting. Put simply, companies are scaling a disproportionate amount of low-value wood in the samples used by the government to set the stumpage fees. The disproportionate amount of low-value wood in the sample means stumpage fees will be set low, allowing companies to then log higher-quality wood while paying for it at the artificially low rate. Interfor has used grade setting with impressive results for its profit margins, said the report. After analyzing coastal stumpage information, it is clear that one company appears to be getting a comparative sweet deal in relationship to other licensees, said the report of the Vancouver-based company. Since 1998, Interfor appears to have paid stumpage fees considerably below those of its competitors on the coast. The report claims Interfor's return to profitability in early 1998 when it posted a 3-month loss of $14.2 million all these are in Canadian dollars, corresponds with a sharp fall in the stumpage rate that it paid. For example, in the third quarter of 1998, Interfor paid an initial stumpage rate of $36.55 per cubic meter for the cutting permit granted for Tree Farm License 38 in the Elijo Valley, about 170 kilometers north of Vancouver. Over the course of the first year of the permit, the stumpage rate varied between $36.55 per cubic meter and $40.72 per cubic meter. During this period, Interfor harvested a total of 3,419 cubic meters of wood. In the fourth quarter of 1999, the stumpage rate dropped dramatically to $8.43 per cubic meter, and the logging rates immediately escalated. The report claims that on 37 cutting permits, Interfor used the grade-setting technique to achieve an overall reduction in average stumpage rates from $29.16 per cubic meter to $5.36 per cubic meter between the first quarter of 1998 and ending in the second quarter of 2000. This resulted in an overall savings to the company of more than $60 million in stumpage fees during that period. Interfor showed well above the regional average for the volume of wood for which a legal minimum of 25 cents per cubic meter was paid. In the fourth quarter of 1999, this rate applied to 53% of the wood cut by Interfor, said the report. This amount is roughly equivalent to $10 per logging truck of wood. On a broader scale, the report says Interfor paid considerably less stumpage in 1998 to the second quarter of 2000 than its major competitors on the British Columbia coast. During this period, Interfor paid almost $100 million less in provincial stumpage than the provincial government projected it should have been paid, based on current stumpage rates. In total, the report claims the British Columbia taxpayer was shortchanged more than $224 million by coastal logging companies from 1998 to the second quarter of last year because of grade setting. To end grade setting and other potential abuses of the stumpage system, the report recommends the following. The Auditor General investigate the entire stumpage and appraisal system. Increase the presence of civil service personnel in the field to ensure company accountability, and order more wood to be sold by auction so that market forces, not industry or government, dictate the price paid. The last recommendation is possibly the only sentence contained within Sierra Legal's 36-page report that Interfor agrees with. Sierra Legal's report is as flawed as the stumpage system itself, said Interfor spokesman Steve Crombie. It purports to talk about the industry and the problems with stumpage, but there are so many, many references to Interfor, it becomes just another bash Interfor exercise disguised as something broader. The one area we agree upon is that stumpage is horrendously flawed and needs to be fixed. If this report is what it gets it done, then good. We need a system that changes with market conditions and that is based on market prices instead of the government setting revenue targets. A tax on the value of the product that goes to market might be one way of addressing this, said Crombie. All British Columbia forestry companies resort to grade setting, said Crombie, adding that its effects are open to interpretation. Grade setting may sound bad, but it improves the flexibility companies need to keep their costs down. Without it, I suspect many companies would be shutting down, which is probably what Sierra Legal wants. Crombie admitted that since 1998, when Interfor was in dire financial straits, the company had become proficient at cutting costs, including within the stumpage system. It had also benefited from the allowances given under the stumpage system to companies like Interfor logging in remote areas. We operate within the rules and with the blessing of the Ministry of Forests, and that's been this way for many, many years, the Interfor spokesman Steve Crombie added. Following publication of yesterday's report, British Columbia Forest Minister Gordon Wilson announced the government will meet with representatives from the coastal forest industry to address concerns about grade setting. Last November, I asked ministry staff to monitor how well coastal licensees were adapting to changes made to provincial appraisal policy introduced in April, said Wilson. The ministry's preliminary information suggests that while most licensees are operating within the policy and legislation, others continue to manipulate the stumpage system. This practice must stop. Ministry staff introduced new scaling practices this month to improve the accuracy of scaling and have started a series of field audits to make sure companies are scaling or measuring and reporting the volume and grade of cut timber soon after they are cut. These measures will curtail Stumpy's management are in place, but other action may also be needed, said Wilson. I am prepared to allow the industry input into further changes to halt these practices while avoiding unnecessary financial burdens for those companies who are playing by the rules. But there are some who would argue that the ministry does not have sufficient staff to enforce those rules. Clearly, there are not enough frontline workers in the Ministry of Forest to ensure that the wood the companies present for assessment fairly represents what's out there, said George Heyman, president of the British Columbia Government and Service Employees Union, which represents frontline workers in the Ministry of Forest. Without adequate staffing levels, companies are left to decide for themselves what they pay without proper monitoring. If you want to read Stumpage Sellout, visit www.sierralegal.org/reports and click on their Stumpage Sellout document. That's www.sierralegal.org/reports, and that's our commentary for today, written by Neville Judd. Looking for an internship? Well, there's an internship in Oregon, protecting public resources on private forest lands. Citizens for Public Resources Incorporated and Respect Public Resources and ForestScience.org are organizations composed of scientists, foresters, activists, and concerned citizens who want to protect public resources on private forest lands in Oregon. These groups are interested in a scientific approach to the restoration and or maintenance of public resources and are engaged in educating the public via slideshows, lectures, field trips, workshops, etc. They are equal opportunity employees and do not discriminate with regard to gender, race, sexual orientation, ethnicity, or anything not relevant to doing the job at hand. Here's the job description. Once again, it's an internship entailing a wide variety of office and clerical duties. Hours are flexible, around 10 to 20 hours a week. Person must be quick, assertive, able, computer literate, and savvy. And the following are not requirements, but just whimsical wish list items: witty, genius level, amusing, lighthearted, sometimes thrilling, and always charming. The best fit includes experience as a forest activist and familiarity with forest issues. This is a paid position, with your hourly wage dependent on experience and production capability. Benefits are not available. And your duties are to create, update, and maintain web pages, update and maintain the reform list, that's an email list server, assist with preparation of presentation material, scan and edit photos, organize them, blah, 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 blah. How do you get this internship? Contact Tom Geisen, coordinator. His email address is tom@geisen.net, that's G-I-E-S-E-N, tom@geisen.net. Good luck on that internship. Turning now to animal news. Dogs chasing wildlife can be a serious problem. Colorado Division of Wildlife says that free-roaming dogs are an increasing threat to wildlife. Wildlife managers believe most people do not believe that their dog would chase wildlife, said Lonnie Brown of the Department of Wildlife, but people think it's great that their dogs can run. But they don't know what dogs do when they are out of sight. Because a dog is well-mannered when the owner is around, the owner underestimates the potential for their pet to chase wildlife. In reality, the dog is out there doing what dogs do, following a scent and chasing down prey. Single dogs are usually not much of a problem to wildlife, but when they team up with neighbor dogs and form packs, the hunter instinct surfaces and they become a serious threat to wild animals. Keep your dogs at home, please. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has designated 8 sites in Starr County, Texas, as critical habitat for the Zapata bladder pod, an endangered plant growing in South Texas. The sites in both Zapata and Starr counties are proposed to be included in the critical habitat designation. After a thorough study, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service included just the sites in Starr County in the final designation. 7 sites totaling 5,158 acres are on federal land, the Lower Rio Grande Valley National Wildlife Refuge. The other site, 1.3 acres, is on private land northeast of the town of Salineno. The Zapata bladder pod is one of the rarest plant species in Texas. The bright yellow flowers appear following rainfall throughout most of the year. A major threat to this mustard plant is habitat loss. The species has declined by 95% within its range. So watch out for the Zapata bladder pod. China to create first national tiger reserve. A Chinese nature preserve that is inhabited by 4 to 6 Siberian tigers is about to be upgraded to a national park, according to the Chinese State Information Service. Huanni River Natural Reserve in the Mount Shangbai area of northeast China's Jilin province was established by the provincial government last May. The Huanni Reserve will soon become a national park for the preservation of the area's endangered tigers. After a survey conducted 2 years ago, Chinese, Russian, and American experts concluded that fewer than 20 Siberian tigers were living in the wild in northeastern China. Mount Shangbai is their most important habitat. And from California, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has begun a comprehensive scientific review to determine whether yellow-billed cuckoos in the western U.S. should be proposed for protection under the Endangered Species Act. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service determined that this review was warranted in response to a petition filed by the Center for Biological Diversity. The yellow-billed cuckoo breeds from southern Canada south to the Greater Antilles and Mexico. The yellow-billed cuckoo is common east of the Continental Divide. Biologists estimate that more than 90% of the bird's riparian habitat in the west has been lost or degraded as a result of conversion to agriculture, dams, or river flow management, bank protection, overgrazing, and competition from exotic plants such as tamarisk. And we want to thank the coalition of groups, including the Center for Biological Diversity, for filing that petition. Hopefully it will be granted. Here's an interesting one. Look-alike fish may get special protection. From Lacey, Washington, a fish called the Dolly Varden may receive protection under the Endangered Species Act because of its striking similarity to the threatened bull trout. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced Tuesday that it is proposing to protect the Dolly Varden trout in the coastal Puget Sound region of Washington under the Similarity of Appearance provision of the Endangered Species Act. The proposal will help eliminate situations where people take bull trout when they believe they are taking Dolly Varden trout. Dolly Varden will only be treated as a listed species where its range overlaps that of the coastal Puget Sound population of bull trout in the Washington state. And critical habitat has been proposed for Kootenai River white sturgeon. When the Libby Dam was built on the Kootenai River in Montana, the Kootenai River white sturgeon populations began to plummet. Living in close connection with the environment it evolved in, the sturgeon only spawns when cued by seasonal flooding. In a classic story of hubris, the dam was built to eradicate natural flooding patterns so that federally subsidized farmers and ranchers can produce excess crops. While the river no longer rises each spring, the farm subsidies flood Montana and Idaho each year in greater and greater level. The sturgeon stopped spawning in 1974. Virtually all remaining fish are at least 25 years old. If the ecosystem is not restored, the sturgeon will go extinct of old age in about 2025. In 1995, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service declared that the dam would drive the sturgeon extinct, yet nothing was done. In December of last year, the Fish and Wildlife Service again concluded that the dam will drive the sturgeon extinct, and this time it has proposed tinkering with the system to at best keep the salmon in a perpetual emergency room state. So there'll be some critical habitat proposed here. And in response to a lawsuit by the Center for Biological Diversity and other groups, the National Marine Fisheries Service proposed to expand the Endangered Species Act protection for southern steelhead trout to include rivers south of Malibu Creek in Los Angeles County to San Mateo Creek, which is in northern San Diego County. Previously, Endangered Species Act protection stopped at Malibu Creek. The proposed expansion will not resolve the lawsuit, however, because it still leaves the southernmost portion of the steelhead's historic range unprotected. This includes all of coastal Southern California and northern Baja Norte, Mexico. It also arbitrarily stops upstream protection at the first dam on each river, even though the species used to range far beyond the dams. And steelhead are a unique form of rainbow trout. Like salmon, they spend most of their adult life in the ocean, but spawn in freshwater streams and rivers. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has designated critical habitat in Alaska for two threatened sea ducks, the Steller's Eider and the Spectacle Eider Duck. About 2,830 square miles of critical habitat in five regions was named for the Steller's Eider, and about 65% of the designated area is federal lands or waters, 25% is state waters, and the remaining 10% is on native lands. As a threatened species, Steller's Eider ducks are protected under the Endangered Species Act wherever they occur, but the designation of critical habitat focuses additional attention on the need to protect the bird's vital habitat. The areas they designated were used by large flocks of Steller's eiders during breeding, molting, wintering, and staging for their spring migration. And about 39,000 square miles of critical habitat was designated for the spectacled eider in Alaska in four different locations. More than 97% of spectacled eider duck critical habitat is in marine waters seldom used by commercial fishermen. In a portion of the land, more than 95% is within areas managed by the federal government, and 1% falls on native lands. And that's good. Problem is, we have to take them to court to get them to protect anything. Moving to Poland from Krakow, we read that environmentalists have stopped the construction of a shopping center near the Polish city of Krakow because of worries about its impact on rare frogs living in a nearby pond, the builder said. As a result of a petition filed by local environmental protection group to the main administrative court, builder XBUD has halted work on the project worth 50 million euros, about $47 million, pending further investigation. Environmentalists claim that rare species of frogs, including the green frog, as well as newts and a type of mussel found in and around a local pond, could be endangered if XBUD carried out plans to build a parking lot within meters of the pond. XBUD said it has followed all applicable environmental protection laws and planned to separate the 1,000-car lot from the deserted pond by a fence. Like that's going to make any difference. Thanks to Reuters for that news story. And 1,000 acres of desert have been protected from off-road vehicles. Closing the second round of settlement talks in a suit brought by the Center for Biological Diversity, the Sierra Club, and Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, the Bureau of Land Management has agreed to close another 1,000 acres of desert to off-road vehicles. The closure will protect the Coachella Valley fringe toad lizard, the Coachella Valley milk vetch, and the flat-tailed horned toad, Palm Springs pocket mouse, the Coachella Valley Palm Springs ground squirrel, the Coachella Valley Jerusalem cricket, and the Coachella giant sand treader cricket. In the first round of the sweeping suit challenging grazing, mining, off-road vehicles, and other damaging practices on 10.5 million acres of the California Desert Conservation Area, the BLM agreed to close 49,000 acres to off-road vehicles to protect endangered plants. The third round of settlements will close thousands more miles of damaging roads, limit grazing, and protect dozens of endangered species. And Earth First Radio will bring those news to you when we get that news. And let's just say that we're out of time right here, because that's it, folks. We're out of time. To get news or announcements from your local bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzeef at cruzio.com. That's C-R-U-Z-E-F at C-R-U-Z-I-O.com. You can send letters to Earth First Radio. Our address, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. But I don't have their new address. Here's their old address. Maybe they'll forward the mail. P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That address again, Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And when I talk to them today, they are moving somewhere around March 20th. So good luck to the Earth First Journal in their move to Tucson, Arizona from Eugene. I'm sure Eugene will miss the journal, and Tucson will love it. If you want to listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer, you can do that every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to the following website, www.microradio.net/FRSC, and listen in, where it's available in real audio and MP3 streaming. There are lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime you want to listen. If you want to listen to this Earth First Radio archive show again, go to the following site, www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to some music from Daryl Cherney This one's called Sally Bell.
I'm here to sing the tale of Sally Bell, a heroine by all that's natural. She's fighting for the fir and redwood so they don't wind the best deadwood to make room for the new Humboldt House Motel. Sally stands but 5'2" on tippy toes, but you ought to see the kind of clout she throws. She'll stand in front of a bulldozer screaming, "Buddy, don't come closer. That tree is gonna stand right where it grows." Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Seems like that's what they've been wanting, so you really might as well. Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Mother Nature's own crusader saved the redwood Sally Bell. Now Sally went on up to Centerville, where those Navy boys were doing their own will, tracking down those Russian nuke subs with these cameras size of bathtubs that they're dropping in the ocean for a spell. But Sally said, big boys, no more. What, you tired of the redwoods? Now you want the ocean floor. But they had her quick arrested when an admiral protested that this little girl was blocking up his door. Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Seems like that's what they've been wanting, so you really might as well. Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Mother Nature's own crusader saved the ocean, Sally Bell. Well, they sentenced Sally Bell to 30 days. No thanks to old Judge Rowland, down old Fortuna way. He was banging on his gavel, trying to appease the rabble of the Navy, FBI, and CIA. Now I have to ask what kind of men these are, to put one like Sally Bell behind those bars. Now she's got the prison ranting, 'cause she's doing all this chanting, and the whole cell block's turned anti-nuclear. Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Seems like that's what they've been wanting, so you really might as well. Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Mother Nature's own crusader saved the planet, Sally Bell. Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Seems like that's what they've been wanting, so you really might as well. Give 'em hell, Sally Bell, give 'em hell. Mother Nature's own crusader saved the people.